श्री भक्तिवृत स्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की इसकान फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से गो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गौराधार श्रीवास हरि गौर भक्तिवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौ गोप गोपीन श्याम कुंद राधा कुंडी गिरि गोवर्धन की श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मायापुर धाम की गंगा माई की चुमुन माई की भक्ति देवी की तुलसी देवी की समवेता भक्त वृंद की चैनिताई गौर प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरी श्री समुद्रवतीस ऑल ग्लोरी श्री समुद्रवतीस ऑल ग्लोरी श्री समुद्रवतीस ऑल ग्लोरी श्री गुरु श्री गौर अंग ऑल ग्लोरी श्री श्री गौर अंग
Last point was on the connection between Bhagavad Gita and Shiva in this okay. particular period.
Does anyone know where we were? Anyone has any idea? Anyone knows where we were reading? Where that was.
Page 11.
Where Arjuna to Maharaj Yudhishthir?
One paragraph
before. Yeah, just before from 15.513.
Okay. Okay. Regarding other important verses in this chapter, indicated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, and or by Srila Prabhupada's frequently quoting them, there are several listed in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, in the final Prayojana section, Siddhi Prema Rasa Mahima, the perfection of the mellow of pure love, the glories of Rasa. It'll be seen as that there's these different sections, so even though something gets to Prayojan, it's to what degree of Prayojan it gets. It's very interesting to note that like the ones, the higher levels of Prayojana, those are in the later cantos. In the lower stages of Prayojana, Prema are in the earlier cantos. So Arjuna to Maharaj Yudhisthira, point 7. Only by his merciful strength, I was able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Drupada for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. So you see the dependency upon the Lord by the devotee in these points is that whatever is the need, it has to be taken from the Lord, right? The tendency is, it's a delicate point because if we say, whatever you want, go to the Lord for, we have so many material desires, many of them useless and all varieties of different things. So then we'll be going to the Lord for all of them. And if we say, don't go to the Lord for material desire, you should just go for bhakti, which is the standard, which is what Krishna is looking for, then the problem is then we don't deal or we tend to ignore the material need. And from this, we may work for us, but we may create an imbalance. Does this make sense? So the point is, don't go to the Lord with material desire, but if you have material desire, He's the only one you can go to. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So in other words, don't go to the Lord for material desire. If there are material desires, then look at them seriously and try to get rid of them. Those you can't get rid of, that you have to address, go to the Lord for those. But don't go just for anything and everything that pops into the mind. Does that make sense? Because then it's actually a need. Right? It's just like this. There's a kid. And the kid says, I'm hungry. Can you get me this? And you get it for them, and then they kind of laugh. They're happy they got it, and then they don't eat it. What would you think? Right? So that's a waste of your time. Because they don't really need it. It's interesting. They'd like to have the option to have it. Right? Like, I'd like to have the option of having, 27 different cars, like that. One for each nakshatra or something. Yes, Yeah? A want and a need, yeah. So the whole point is desire is in the level of sambandha. Desire, it's like something interesting. You can see a relationship with it, it looks nice, but you don't need it. But if it's a need, then the need go to Krishna for. Desires you try to control so that they don't become needs. But those desires that have to be dealt with, desires that become needs, that you turn to Krishna for. Does that make sense? So therefore, the pure devotee, whatever his position, then is perfectly connected to Krishna. That's the point, that it's connected to Krishna. It's not that it's detached from the material world that's important. That's secondary. What's important, that it's attached to Krishna. Right? But to be perfectly attached to Krishna, it has to be detached from here. Does that make sense? But then one can say, okay, so then the Pandavas should be detached from here. They are detached from here. For the Lord's pastime, they're taking up the position of grihasthas. So the grihasthas have the duties. Duties means they have to get married. So that was Domya's point. Chitrarata's point. When Arjuna and the Pandavas came to the Ganga at night, then Chitrarata came and attacked him. Because he said, this is our time, we're Gandharvas, we're supposed to come at night. You humans can't come in the day. Can't come at night. Arjuna then quoted that, no, the Ganga, the Himalayas, and a well can approach at any time of the night, any time of the day. Auspicious, it doesn't matter. They can always be approached. Other things, and you worry about auspicious and inauspicious. Then, after some time, then Chitrarata mentioned that we're Gandharvas, we're more powerful than humans, especially at night. So the only reason you could defeat us is that you are brahmacharis, you're powerful. But at the same time, the reason I could attack you is because you're not rightly situated. Right? And so one of the points was is they aren't in an ashram, particular ashram, because they've graduated, but at the same time they haven't become grihasthas. Right? There's no plan. If there's a plan, okay, that's there, but there's no plan. They don't have a plan. So they're not like situated where they're going, what their point is. And the other one was that they didn't have a priest. Right? A kshatriya should walk with a priest in front. The kshatriya should follow the Brahmins. Right? That's the principle. So the priest should always be walking in the front. Like that. So then therefore, because of the point that Chitrarata made, and then later on then Vyasadeva's made the same point, then they need to get married. Therefore, then they go to the Swayamvar, and then they marry Draupadi. So, to be able to perform their duties properly, whatever it is, you're dependent upon the Lord. That's the point, yes. Yes, he has insulted in front of his wife. Because, yeah. Means, in other words, because the religious principles are very important for the women, because then there's more of a sense of gain, justice, being on the platform of the mind functions and is peaceful in the mode of goodness that's controlled by religious principles. So therefore, any religious principles being broken in front of women has to be dealt with very clearly. Well, if it's only men, then you can sit down and discuss it, because you can deal with it on the intellectual platform. But for women, you're dealing with it on the mental platform. So it has to be dealt with very clearly according to religious principles. So, as far as Chitrarata saw, the Pandavas were breaking codes of religion. Therefore, he and his wife was there. He needed to attack. he needed to correct the situation because he's a Gandharva. He's senior to the humans. Humans are misbehaving. It's his duty as a king of Gandharvas. He's not just a citizen. He's a king. So he should correct that. Like that. So, but the point is all these things are going on because they're in scripture. They're being given by Krishna. We have to perform some position to interact with others. There must be some duties. So those duties that are favorable, the best situation is accepted. Those duties are performed. We depend upon the Lord to perform those duties. Does that make sense? Therefore, even though its activity is seemingly of this material world, it's not, because they're all connected to Krishna. So that's the point. Duties you have to do, those you depend upon Krishna. Needs that you have that may not be important, but within your realm of your duties, then you still turn to Krishna. Desires that are neither important for your duty nor important for anything, then one should try to work to drop those. Like that. But even if you can't still, then it becomes a need by contemplation. Then we need to take shelter of Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is what we see is coming up again and again, because for Krishna it's the relationship of that interaction. Because if you have a need, but he can fulfill that need, so that makes him more important than the need, because he's the fulfiller of the need. Does that make sense? So even though we're going to him for a need, but he's the one fulfilling it, so that puts him in he's the stable one, because needs come and go, but he's always the stable relationship. Does that make sense? That's the principle. During our exile, Durvasa Muni, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies to put us in dangerous situation, in dangerous trouble. Intrigued with our enemies to put us in dangerous trouble. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us. By his accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed, and all the three worlds were also satisfied. So satisfying Krishna means to satisfy everyone. You know, that's the philosophical point here. What we see here in the thing of relationship here is that the Lord's devotees, he is the protector of them. So he's creating the facility for them, and he's protecting them, right? Gaining Draupadi is creating the facility. So that's gain, but also safety is there, right? So Krishna is our protector, Krishna is our maintainer. Does that make sense? So here, they got Draupadi, he's the maintainer. That he protected them at this, you know, political intrigues of the Kauravas with Durvasa Muni, that's Krishna is our protector. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of the mountain Himalaya. Thus he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me. In addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. So now we're talking about prestige. So you have the facility, you have the protection, but then there's also the social status, because interaction depends upon status. Right? You're going to have social interaction, the varnashram. There must be some status, because if everything's the same, then that's called Brahman. Right? And Brahman doesn't interact with Brahman. You understand? It's when you add the Haladini potency that you get interaction. Right? Brahman is there, so you have two Brahmans. But unless there's a need for interaction, so that's need, that's Prayojan, that's Ladini Shakti, then there is Abhideya, there's interaction. Right? So there must be variety. So in it, one of the varieties is going to be prestige. Right? Means somebody has to be, means if everybody's equal, then where is the meaning, where does parental ras come in, servitor come in? You know what I'm saying? It just won't, you can appreciate that. You could appreciate, you could have friends that are equal, you could have, Yeah. I guess you could probably, just trying to think within the conjugal, what is the equal part? Equal part will probably be conceiving children, because that's like a 50-50 word there. But other aspects of it have elements of parental and servitorship in it. So you'd have to cut... But friendship only if it's equal, but there's four kinds of friendship. One of them is the friends are senior, like Balaram and that, and then there's friends that are junior. So that would, what I'm saying is, if you only had equality, you cut out a majority of the rasa, you know. And even to appreciate someone in neutrality, you're appreciating their quality, and it's not, you're not seeing as an equal because it's not interaction. You're appreciating, so one sense that respect you're putting in a senior position. So that would mean, without the respect, there couldn't be any relationship. So you probably have to say you'd have to. There is no relationship without having this element of respect. So if there's respect, then that means the position of respect is a position of prestige. It doesn't mean that the person who is in that position of respect is proud. That's not important. But the position has to be there. There has to be a respectable position. There has to be something respectable about. Otherwise, how do you have a relationship, right? You don't interact with somebody who's not respectable. Right? So even if they're equal, there must be some element that you respect in them. Right? Then relationship can happen. Otherwise, it can't happen. So here then we're bringing out the point is that even that respect is coming by Krishna's grace. By Krishna's grace, he was able to get the respect of Lord Shiva. And so he gave him his weapon. Because Lord Shiva gave him his weapon, therefore who else wouldn't give? Right? Because the only one that would be considered more powerful than Shiva would be Brahma. Right? But so Indra and Varuna and Vayu and all them, they would naturally give their weapons if Shiva's given his. Because none of them can defeat Shiva, so therefore his position is very strong. Like that. Also that he got a half-raised seat. Indra has the raised seat, but he had a half-raised seat because he's Indra's son. And even sometimes when he first came, Indra would sit him down even on his throne with him. But like the son, sit with him and hold him and like that. But if he was actually sitting in the assembly, he got a half-raised seat. Like that. And he went to the heavenly planets in his own body. He didn't have to change. So all this is by Krishna's grace. Right? So it's like that. So the problem is not what we're dealing with in the material world. It's not the activities we're performing. It's if it's connected to Krishna. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So now here we notice that all the things that Arjuna is connecting to Krishna of this world, all of superior nature, they're all authorized things of the scriptures. Right? They're of superior nature. So that can very nicely be engaged in Krishna service, yes.
When it says that they went to the spiritual world in their own body, can you explain this?
No, did I say spiritual world? I thought I said heavenly planets. Because it's different means you have to have a body suitable for that. Just like if you want to live in water, you have to have a body that's suitable for water. Like we can't live in water. Right? Fish can live in water, but fish can't live on land. So in the same way as we couldn't live in the heavenly planets, because you don't have the qualities, predominant qualities of goodness to be able to do that. So therefore you see it's only very, very great personalities sometimes are taken to the heavenly planets. As they are. We see a few. I mean, the Pandavas went, I think Nahusha went, but then got turfed out. And then Ramachandra's father, he went.
But only to the heavenly planets, not the spiritual world. You get rid
of the, there's no material bodies. No, there's no material bodies. Like that. But the Pandavas' bodies are the same. They're no difference, because they are. They just act in such a way that looks material. Yeah, he also went to Vaikuntha. They went to see Mahavishnu. They went as he was.
So as their bodies are manifested in this pastime, the qualities that they display in their pastime with Krishna, these are the same qualities they have in the spiritual world.
Yes.
They don't have like
They don't have separate. No. See, is I think Prabhupada's mentioned that Arjuna, that manifestation of that personality, is only in Krishna's pastimes in the material world. Does that make sense? So it's not that Arjuna's expansion is someone else, like that. Or is that means is here. He is a manifestation, just like when Krishna goes to Vaikuntha, then his associates will manifest as like Garuda and Hanuman. They're like that. Or Vishwakshena. Like Vishwakshena is only in Vaikuntha. You don't find Vishwakshena in Dwarka. Does that make sense? So like that is... Maybe, but I'm just saying Vishwakshena is not there. It's a complete change of... But someone like Narad Muni goes everywhere. Or let's say in Goloka you'll have Radharani, in Gokul you have Radharani. But it's not a separate expansion. But like Vishwakshena is just in Vaikuntha. When he comes in the material world, then it splits, you get more personalities. You get Ganesh, you get Skanda, like that. But so Arjuna is just here. You only see that manifestation here, because then the Lord performs these pastimes together, because it's a principle, Narayan. The Lord and the living entity, they're always together. You can't separate them. So then he'll always be with his pastimes here. You know.
So are you in the spiritual world?
Means because Krishna's there, it is the spiritual world. See, here is that one is trying to take eternity and shoehorn it into time and space. Because you're making a distinction that Goloka is the spiritual world and here is not. Where Krishna is and performs his pastimes, that is the spiritual world.
So it's more like the concept of the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna and the concept of the relationship in the spiritual world.
Yeah, means he's that their pastime happens in the manifestation of the spiritual world in the Leela here, in the Boma Leela. Yeah, so many. Yeah, Ramananda Rai is there in this, because it's a very subtle point there, especially when you get into these energies. Okay? That's why the question of where does the soul come from doesn't come up as a point of discussion, because we always want to fit it into time and space. Right? Means that one party will say, you can't fall from the spiritual world. Right? But spiritual world has to mean Goloka Vrindavan. Otherwise, if spiritual world can mean Boma Leela, right? Because you can't fall from there because the jiva is more powerful than material energy. Great. That's right. And there are no bad qualities in Goloka Vrindavan. Right? So only perfected persons are there. So therefore, you can't fall from there. Right? But at the same point is, how do the demons walk into Vrindavan? Right? When we say the demons come and attack Vrindavan, we're not saying, well, they're attacking, you know, kind of like the material aspect of Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan. No. We don't make that distinction. If we do, that's mundane. Those that live in Braja Vrindavan don't make the distinction. You know, they don't make the distinction. You know, it's just like the father, it's his sons. But amongst the sons, they'll go, well, I'm the good son, he's the bad son, and you know, I'm the better son. You know, the father, it's the sons. So those that actually live in Braj, they don't make a distinction between Goloka or Gokul. It's just there's some uniqueness of pastimes about them. But they don't make the distinction. We make the distinction. So because of that, therefore, when you start going into things that overlap, that's where we start having difficulty. Okay. Great generals like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Bhurishrava, Shusharma, Shalya, Jayadratha, and Bahlika all directed their invincible weapons against me. But by his, Lord Krishna's grace, they could not even touch a hair on my head. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, the supreme devotee of Lord Narsingadev, was unaffected by the weapons the demons used against him. Yeah, so then the Lord is here is another thing of protection. One is protecting the prestige. One is protecting their loss of facility. Here directly is life. That. O King, his joking and frank talks were pleasing and beautifully decorated with smiles. His addresses unto me as O son of Prita, O friend, O son of the Kuru dynasty, and all such heartiness are now remembered by me, and thus I am overwhelmed. Because the whole point is, being God is nice. And if your thing is he's God, that's also nice. But there's a lot of that. And there's enough of it. What interests him is that he can be very natural, right? It's just like the high court judge is there at the court. So that's, you know, his nature, his duty. So therefore the interactions with the other, you know, judges and the barristers and everybody in the court and the respect he gets and all that is very nice. But he appreciates most to just be with those close, intimate friends where they don't deal with them as a judge. And they can just relax with them and be natural. Like when you're with yourself, you're relaxed and natural, you know. You don't look in the mirror and, you know, Your Honor, I think, you know, you need a shave today. You know, it doesn't work like that. You know, you're just relaxed and comfortable with yourself. So the natural thing is you want to expand that comfortableness, that relaxedness. So that's the intimate rasa. Does that make sense? So that's what's manifest in Golok. That's what makes it unique, is Krishna is relaxed. And the most relaxed is in Vrindavan. Does that make sense? So he enjoys this, being relaxed and all this. But it's based on affection. He's dealing with us and wants to be relaxed with us out of affection. We're his parts and parcels. He likes to interact with us. He's comfortable with us. We're the ones that are all mental and bent out of shape and don't trust anybody and this and that. And does that make some sense? You know, it's a common theme. Actually, that's probably why it always works. It's a common thing. You know, you have the one personality who's, you know, very peaceful and nice, doesn't get angry, doesn't get disturbed, always there, always steady, stable, and they strike up a relationship with another qualified person, but because that other person's grown up in a very unstable environment without any proper protection, they can't believe that that protection is real. And so they're always like doubting and breaking their relationship and doing all kinds of crazy and stupid stuff. So that's kind of like us. And Krishna, he's always there. He's cool. He's always waiting like that. Have you ever thought about it? You go out all day, you do this, you do that, you go to the temple, and you've been possibly ignoring Krishna all day or all week. You go to the temple, and when you walk in, Krishna's smiling. If he wasn't smiling, you wouldn't be happy. But you expect him to be smiling. But think about it. If you had somebody who is so close to you and only occasionally you think of them or interact with them, you might think the person doesn't care. Does that make sense? Right? So would you be able to do that? Someone who is very important to you, then they only show up now and again only on their time and only stay as long as they want and then go away. Would you, every time they come, be able to be there smiling and happy to see them? No. But God can. Right? So now, to be able to be like that would be how much affection? Right? Right? Isn't it? You make a new friendship, right? Therefore, because it's new and it's exciting, therefore a moment here and there is enough. You're happy. Right? But as time goes and that relationship deepens and that sense of trust and ownership is there, you can't tolerate that they're busy with someone else instead of with you. Right? But now here, God does sense of, I mean, you can't get more of a sense of ownership than God, right? It is his. It's not a discussion, you know. Not only is it his, it's him, you know. It's like you know, your car is you, right? You know, so you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But at the same time, as he can maintain that position, that affection, whenever you come, he'll interact with you. Like that. So that is affection. But that's the eternal affection. You know. And it's very special. And factually, that's male. Like that. Okay. I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses. I use them as the same Arjuna with whom all kings offer their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. In other words, without Krishna, it's useless. That's the whole point. It means you never perform an activity that's not going to actually effectively, or it's not going to have any effect. Right? You pour a ghee on the ashes, it doesn't do anything, because it's got to go into the flame. The flame burns, and then it's carried. You pour it on the ash, it sits there in the ash. It doesn't go anywhere, because Agni is in the fire. It's not in the ash, right? Like that. It'll be in the flames is his tongue, the coals are his eyes, like that. The smoke, the wood is his ears, you know. So that's why you pour the ghee in the flame, because you eat through the tongue, like that. Does that make sense? Not the ash. Ash isn't mentioned as one of the parts of Agni, so it won't be carried. The Jatavedas will not carry the offering. So it's useless. So he's making the point is all these things are there, but without Krishna, it's useless. It doesn't function. So here it's obvious because it's not happening. But in the same way, as even it does happen, it's still useless. Right? The big business mandate, magnate is there, all his ships are plying, all his, you know, his offices are working nicely, the profits are coming in, but if it's not connected to Krishna, it's still useless. Right? You know, still a guy will die. And that's it. Okay. So thus ends the Vinodakam, or points of special interest for the student preparing for the Bhakti Vai Bhav degree. The Parishishtam general appendix continues. So these were put in at this point. In other words, Vinodakam, points of special interest that you're bringing out here. You're trying to, in other words, we would just say, okay, the philosophy, okay, then, you know, Krishna's there, okay, it's the pastime, but why is special the pastime? What is there? What is going on in relationship with Krishna? Does that make sense? Because that's what the Bhagavatam is for. Pibhata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. It's the rasa, and it's for those who are pure at heart. It's for those who can appreciate, those who are not envious. So that you can appreciate relationships. What's the problem with envy? Why do we choose non-envious? Because envy is why we relieve the relationship with Krishna. Because if there's envy, you don't interact. Not at least favorably. Right? Like that. We just ignore it, yes.
Maharaj, here it says that I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, and the same chariot. So, and before you had mentioned some classes ago that Krishna told Arjuna to get down from the chariot first, mm-hmm. and then Krishna got down the chariot first.
That was probably a different chariot. Means the kings may have many chariots. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But that specific chariot, that was the one that I know of that was given by Soma. You know. Like that, Soma, I think, came down from Brahma. Brahma to Agni, Agni to Soma, Soma to him. And so then it went back to them. Like that. But he would have other chariots, because he had chariots before those pastimes. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Selected purports from Srila Prabhupada's purports in this chapter. Purport 5. This is which? This is still 15. Okay. Yeah, from 17, I think then the principal point of each of these purports is then given, so it's clear what you're looking at. In Bhagavad Gita 10:41, the Lord says, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. No one, therefore, can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. When the Lord descends on the earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays the divine energy possessed by him, but also empowers his associate devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of incarnation. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4.5 that the Lord and his eternal associates descend on the earth many times, but the Lord remembers all the different roles of incarnations, whereas the associates, by his supreme will, forget them. Similarly, the Lord takes away with him all his associates when he disappears from the earth. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when his mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required. And they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible, even for a great devotee like Arjuna, or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of the ordinary living beings who are but figs compared to such great souls? The lesson is, therefore, that no one should be puffed up for his powers borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obliged to the Lord for such benefactions and must utilize such power for the service of the Lord. Such power can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord, so the best use of such power and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. That to do means all energy is Krishna, so that means for anything to happen, it must be his energy. So then his devotees are also endowed with that energy to perform the pastime. But it's only for that. To go back to Godhead, Arjuna didn't need any of those. It's his affection for Krishna. As we see, is what's manifesting now is all his remembrance of Krishna, his affection of Krishna, his caring for Krishna. That's what's necessary to go back to Godhead. The other aspects aren't important. So those are removed like that. So then in here, then Prabhupada makes the point is that all energies are... So here's the great devotees are empowered with great volumes of Krishna's energy. Right? So therefore it makes something very special, because the Lord is special, so what he does is special. So therefore his devotees are special, then the whole pastime becomes special. But even in the material world, anybody who has any quality, that's coming from Krishna. That element is from him. So no one can become proud that that's them. Right? Everything is borrowed. There's nothing here that's not borrowed. Just that this lump of dead matter moves around, that's Krishna's energies. It's not our energy. You know, we're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. We don't include energies to move around big lumps of dead matter. Right? That's not one of our energies. It's one of Krishna's energies. It's not one of our energies. Our energy is we can desire to... interact with Krishna, be involved in Krishna's. You know, that is our energy to desire. From that, then we desire to be involved with Krishna, or we desire to be involved not with Krishna. Though, even though it's in our mind is not with Krishna, still you can't get away from Krishna. It's all Krishna anyway. Like that, you can't separate it. like that. The citizen thinks, oh, I'm free from the government. And they're doing all the things, but still, they're driving around on the street that was created by the government. You know, that there is petrol in the stations is because the government is creating the facility that it can happen. You know, that there's food anywhere, that's because of that. So if you go off to the jungle, off in the middle of nowhere, then you can maybe say, I'm independent from the government. But, you know, if you're running around in their streets and, you know, throwing things at their, you know, army and their tanks, means your influence on the government, you're trying to apply it through harassing their facilities, but you're still dependent upon their facilities, right? If they don't have a tank for you to blow up, how are you going to show your influence? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Just like you say, oh, I am independent in the fighting. No, if it wasn't, if their nose wasn't there, you wouldn't have anything to punch. You know what I'm saying? So you're still dependent upon them. But if you go to the forest, then you're not dependent upon them. But then there's no interaction. So as soon as there's interaction, you're dependent upon the person you interact with. That's rasa. Is willingly depending upon others, submitting to others, so that relationship is there. Does that make sense? So therefore is that we should not be proud of what we have, and whatever we have must be engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So that's the point being made. You had something? Sixth purport. Factually, for a living being, there is no one dearer than the Lord. The Lord expands Himself by innumerable parts and parcels as Svamsa and Vibhinamsa. Paramatma is the Svamsa part of the Lord, whereas the Vibhinamsa parts are the living beings. As a living being is the important factor in the material body, for without the living being, the material body has no value. Similarly, without Paramatma, the living being has no status quo. Can you mention to Maharaj in this purport about the use of the word, term status quo? Okay, in this one. Just the use of status quo as Ed. Okay. Similarly, Brahman or Paramatma has no locus standi without the Supreme Lord, Krishna. This is thoroughly explained in the Bhagavad Gita. They are all interlinked with one another, or interdependent factors. Thus, in the ultimate issue, the Lord is the summum bonum, and therefore the vital principle of everything. Also, this connection with summum bonum, status quo. So dear means what's important to you, right? What is a need becomes dear to you. So we don't exist without Krishna. So our existence is based on Him. So that makes Him the most dear. Right? So here he's using the word locus standi. It would mean there isn't anything, but there's no status quo, means there's no position. Right? Status quo means there's a position. Right? A set position. So there isn't a set position without the Lord. The Lord is the standard by which you make positions. Otherwise, how do you say a position? Right? You have to have something to measure it by. Okay, the position is, put every 1 foot, you know, or every hour. Or, you know what I'm saying? There has to be something by which you measure it. Or anyone in this economic bracket, or anyone in this level of influence or power, you know, only CEOs can come to this program, or only heads of state should be at this program. Right? So that's the status quo. But how do you measure any of that? So the measure of anything, any status, is Krishna. Right? He is the most power, all status is going to come off of one of the six opulences. So he is the standard of those opulences. He's the complete opulence. Right? So therefore, everything's off of him. So there is no status quo without him. Right? We're dependent upon, without him we don't exist. That makes him the most dear. And without him, you can't establish any standards. Right? Therefore, nothing has any standing. Therefore, he is the supreme goal of everything. Does that make some sense? Okay, anything on that? Okay, any questions on this so far? No? Okay. Eighth purport. The demon Mayodhanava was an inhabitant of the forest Kandava. And when the Kandava forest was set on fire, he asked protection from Arjuna. Arjuna saved his life. And as a result of this, the demon felt obliged. He reciprocated by building a wonderful assembly house for the Pandavas, which attracted the extraordinary attention of all state princes. They felt the supernatural power of the Pandavas, and thus without grudge, all of them submitted and paid tributes to the emperor. The demons possess wonderful and supernatural powers to create material wonders, but they are always disturbing elements of the society. The modern demons are the harmful material scientists who create some material wonders for disturbance in society. The modern demons, okay. For example, the creator of nuclear weapons has caused some panic in human society. Maya was also a materialist like that, and he knew the art of creating such wonderful things. And yet, Lord Krishna wanted to kill him. When he was chased both by the fire and by the wheel of Lord Krishna, he took shelter of such a devotee as Arjuna, who saved him from the wrath of the fire of Lord Sri Krishna. Devotees are therefore more merciful than the Lord, and in devotional service, the mercy of a devotee is more valuable than the mercy of the Lord. Both the fire and the Lord ceased from chasing the demon as soon as both of them saw that the demon was giving shelter by such a devotee as Arjuna. This demon, feeling obliged to Arjuna, wanted to do him some service to show his gratefulness. But Arjuna declined to accept anything from him in exchange. Lord Krishna, however, being pleased with Maya for his taking shelter of devotee, asked him to render service unto King Yudhishthira by building a wonderful assembly house. The process is that by the grace of the devotee, the mercy of the Lord is obtained. By the mercy of the Lord, a chance to serve the Lord's devotees is obtained. The club of Bhima Sena was also a gift of Mayodhanava. The devotee is not taking anything. Here it's on the principle of the Kshatriyas that it's my duty to give shelter to whoever takes shelter of me. So it's not that I'm not doing this as business. I'm not a businessman. So therefore, I don't want anything from you. Same with Chittaratta. Then and there, he couldn't take something from him, having given him his life. Like that. So that's just the duty. If you take, then it's business. You're a Vaishya, so I, as a king, I can't take. So he says, you want, do something for Krishna. And Krishna's point is, well, I'm the one that was trying to get rid of you anyway. You know, so, but because you took shelter of the devotees, I'm pleased with that. So to give further, then I'll give you a further opportunity to render service to the devotees, because that's the most pleasing to him, right? Because all this, you know, nice Maya is not very pleasing to Krishna. Wonderful things are not, they just make trouble. People get distracted by them, bewildered by them, so Krishna's not so interested in that. So the main point here, Prabhupada's, or one of the main points is that taking shelter of the devotee is more pleasing to the Lord, and that gives rise from Krishna being pleased, gives rise for more shelter of the devotees, opportunity to serve and associate. Because we know Krishna through the devotees. We don't know Krishna directly. That's not very interesting, right? It's known through. The child is special. The grandchild is more special. Right? Because it's not yours, it's your child's child. So it takes on a specialness. So the same way as Krishna has his direct associates. So what expands that is the associates' service. I mean, the living entity's service to the associates of the Lord. Does that make sense? That becomes special. So, yeah. So we're seeing a theme here of the interaction of the devotees with the Lord and of the Lord's devotees with the other devotees. Right? So we're getting here a lot of interaction. Right? So this is what's the perfection. Vedanta Sutra was written as the essence of the Veda. But when it comes to giving the full conclusion of the Veda, it comes in the form of Purana. Because Purana is pastime. And the pastime means then the Lord's interaction with His devotees. Does that make sense? So the tattva is not the final statement. Right? It's not the last, as it probably uses that term, the last word, yeah. Tattva is not the last word. Rasa is the last word. Right? Tattva is just the facts about the situation and the individuals involved in the rasa. Right? Krishna's interacting with the cowherd boys. That's rasa. Tattva is he's God, they're his expanded energies. Right? So, but that just sets what's going on. What's the scene? Does that make sense? But the whole point is we're trying to get to the point of the rasa. So therefore, Purana is the better medium because its natural thing is pastimes, which means rasa. So that's why the ultimate Vedic literature is a Purana, as opposed to some other work, another variety of Vedic literature. Does that make sense? Right there. Any other questions, friends? Yes, sir. Say again? Yes, the rasa is explaining what the tattvas are doing. Does that make sense? These tattvas are the different categories of entities and their relationships. So rasa is what they're doing. Does that make sense? So the prominent thing is what is going, that's what's going on. The knowledge of it, that's nice to know, but the knowledge is to enhance the rasa, right? You want to know who said what to who and who's doing what. What's
like in the plate, the Brahman is presenting the tattva in a plate as a Buddha with all the amulet, the
furia,
and the play what they're doing.
Play is what they're doing, yeah. Yeah, who's who and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Should we first understand tattva?
Should we first understand tattva? If you're taking it as that one has to be finished before the other, then yes, it's through knowledge you're going to get yourself out of the material world. With the sword of knowledge, you're going to cut through material attachment. But having done that, then in the transcendental platform, tattva isn't important. Knowledge is not important. It's the interaction. It's important. So the process of removing the material, with the fire, let's say, of knowledge, it burns up the fuel of material existence, so that when you are freed from material existence, there's no fire either. So you could say, in total, if you want to look at the picture like that, that tattva is accomplished perfectly, then rasa can be accomplished perfectly. But that's in the bigger. But in the smaller is that you learn what it is and immediately you apply it because that's what the chit potency is. Sambandhi-jnana is knowing what is the relationship, so that's there. But ultimately the relationship's I am servant. So then you have to serve. So that's abhideya. So abhideya means you have knowledge, based on the knowledge of the relationship, therefore you serve. So ultimately it's just I am Krishna's servant, and then ultimately is Krishna's my friend, or Krishna's my lover, or Krishna's like that. Yes?
I would also explain that example with being this ritual of the Vasa leading. We have been, we don't know the purpose, and we make the mistake, it's for material.
Yes. Yeah. That makes sense. So The tattva is there to keep us from making, having misunderstandings of the actual position. The tattva exactly establishes who's who, what's going on, exactly what's there. Then it's there, just like that story we mentioned, Durvasa. Then the element Maharaj told the story of to get across the Jamuna to see Durvasa, then the gopis had to bow down to the Jamuna and say, please let us, you know, Krishna, who is the, you know, best of brahmacharis, you know, so please let us pass. You know, and the gopis are kind of like, are you sure? Like that. Because in tattva, yes, he is the supreme, everything is his. He's like, you know, there's no, it's him. You know, if you shave your face, you can't be saved, that you're, you know, that there's something going on, you know. It's not, you know, you're not having a relation with another man, you know. It's like, you know, you know, shaving your own face. So the living entities are all his. It's all him. So that way then there's not. But at the same time in rasa, then it appears that it's that difference. And so that's brought out. And so there. Same with Durvasa. He only eats grass. Right? So therefore, then... Yes, he only eats grass, but since you've offered him this, and as a sage, he should reciprocate by getting the blessings of the Brahmins, you're benefited. Therefore, him being pleased with that attitude then reciprocates by eating your food. But he doesn't need your food, he has plenty of grass. You know, so, therefore, when the gopis then say, Durvasa, you know, is detached, he only eats grass, then, you know, it doesn't make sense. But by knowing the tattva, then the rasa makes sense. So without it, it gives the guidelines by which you can do it. Because what's happening is you're having to operate a relationship that you don't have any, you don't have, the feelings aren't deep enough to run purely on their own. Right? It means you're establishing a relationship. It's, oh, because they're the big man and this and that, and he's got all these things, and I'm this position, and I need that support or facility, or favor, or something. Therefore, based on that, I'm doing this and that. Oh, he's a big guy, so then we should make this arrangement and use this kind of car and give this kind of food. So it's all based on knowledge. The rasa is happening, but it's based on knowledge. But when that deepens, then it's the point of out of affection. His mother doesn't think, well, he's a big man, I should feed him. No, she's just, he's the son, so she feeds him. You know, it has nothing to do that he's the prime minister of the country or something. She couldn't care less, you know. It's a nice thing with her friends, you know. You know, or to joke about it, you know, the prime minister of the country still needs his mother to pick up his socks, you know. So it makes her feel good, you know. He runs the country, but I manage him, right? You know, so, like that. So it's only there to add to rasa. Tattva is only for rasa. And then when rasa becomes prominent, like in Vrindavan, the tattva is only there to add to that rasa by have some fun and jokes. You know, you have demigods, you have this and that, therefore there's pujas for them, therefore Radha and Krishna can meet while Radharani does the Surya puja. Right? Otherwise, it would be tough. You know. If she only worshipped Krishna as a deity, then she's worshipping Krishna, and then he's God, and so what's the problem if God's with his devotees and this and that, and then where's your Braj Leela? Like that. That makes sense? Okay. So end here. And that continue on Thursday. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jainita Gauru Premanandi.